Page 41, who can provide what health services, developments in a changing landscape, part 1, Stephen Mendelson. Editor's note, in mid-August, Jeff Tom sent a press release from DREDF about a state Supreme Court decision allowing insulin to be injected to school children with diabetes by non-nurses. Knowing how busy Jeff was, I asked my husband Steve if he could write a few explanatory words suggesting why this decision might be of interest to blind people. Page 42. He's incredibly busy, too, but when I need an article, well, he finds it politically expedient to oblige. But then I must face the consequences, all 2,800 words of them. No one gets to write that many words without good reason. I was ready to get out my metaphorical axe, but decided to ask my often wordy spouse to cut, so I wouldn't inadvertently chop useful stuff. He explained that once he got started, he really felt it was important to present the big picture, not just how the law might impact all of us, but how it connects to the important issues of the new health care initiative and long-term care. The article also shows how a court chooses what to decide and what not to, and why that means that the law is sometimes clear and sometimes not, and how decisions have unexpected implications and consequences. In other words, he wanted to show us how the sausage is made. Above all, no simple few-word intro. In all seriousness, despite his relationship to me and what that suggests about space, he sometimes receives in this publication, I felt that the entire complex picture needed to be put before our readers. And quite frankly, I know of no one more of an expert to do it than Steve. Reading this article isn't easy, but I hope you'll find it was worth it. Many BC readers will be familiar with the effort that took place in Sacramento this year to pass legislation expanding the permissible scope of optometrist practice. Page 43. Some may also be aware of proposals to broaden the role of nurse practitioners and to increase the responsibilities of certain pharmacists. The history of medicine in this country is partly a story of the ongoing competition for turf among healthcare disciplines and between specialties within the medical profession. That competition is heated up noticeably this year because of the Affordable Care Act. Operating in our state through the new covered California Health Insurance Exchange and through an expansion of financial eligibility for Medi-Cal, the Affordable Care Act, more widely known as Obamacare, will result in millions more people having access to health care. That will create new customers for many health care providers, but will also place unprecedented demands on health care system resources. There probably aren't enough primary care doctors around to give everyone the convenience and speed of access and the level of attention we would hope. And some specialties may come under similar supply and demand pressures. So the state is looking into how to provide quality care to the new people who will be able to afford it, and various health care disciplines are trying to help meet the need. Page 44. Opponents of Obamacare have long complained that it will cause physician shortages, since those opponents are mostly people who already have or who think they have good health insurance. What they mean is that more people will have access to what they have. But leaving aside the arguable selfishness of such critics, the reality is that there will be problems, particularly with Medi-Cal, where the state's planned 10% fee cut to doctors and other practitioners will cause some to opt out of the Medi-Cal program. Under such circumstances, expansion of the roles and responsibilities of various medical specialties and non-physician health care disciplines seems sensible. But such arguments always run up against concerns about quality and expertise. These issues are well beyond the scope of this article, but it is important to acquaint you with some recent developments that may have long-term costs, supply and quality implications for many services, including some that you consider health care and some that you may not, in the months and years to come. The competition over who can provide what service or perform which procedures has taken a new turn. Page 45, not connected with Obamacare, but as the culmination of a case that has been making its way through the courts for 7 years, the state Supreme Court on August 12th issued an important decision concerning who can administer insulin to students with diabetes in schools. The court decided that the law did not require that these injections be administered only by nurses, but could be given by volunteer trained school personnel who were not certified or licensed health care workers. In the wake of this decision, issues are likely to arise in other settings about what services normally thought of as health care or quasi-health care services must be provided only by licensed health workers and what services can be provided by lay people. Services likely to come into question in this light include the administration of various kinds of medication, especially by injection, the taking of various tests and the collection of samples and data, the monitoring and maintenance of remote e-health technology, and the adjustment of wheelchair seating systems and other mobility devices. For people who are blind and who could and would perform many of these functions independently if they were accessible by non-visual means, these questions have important implications for the cost and availability of a wide range of services and life options. Page 46, where lay people are allowed to perform various procedures, provide services, or administer medication or other treatments, questions will also arise as to the level of training and the kinds of supervision these providers will require. Settings where these questions are likely to arise include nursing homes, the In-Home Supportive Services Program, IHSS, and even the income tax law, where the characterization of a service as quasi-medical or non-medical will determine its deductibility. As the demand for health care services and for long-term services and supports, LTSS, grows, and as the imperatives of cost reduction increase, in tandem with this demand, these questions of jurisdiction, training, and supervision will more and more often determine the availability or affordability of needed services. Against this backdrop, the court's decision and the court's reasoning are worth our attention. How did the court reach its decision, and how generalizable is the court's decision to other treatments or other settings? Page 47. The case is American Nurses Association v. Torlakson. The case began in 2005 when several families brought a federal court class action lawsuit against two school districts alleging violation of the Federal Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, and alleging violation of Section 504 of the Federal Rehabilitation Act. The alleged violations consisted of failing to make insulin injections available to students with diabetes who needed them during the school day, thus depriving them of their right to a free and appropriate public education. A settlement was reached in 2007, in which the defendant school districts and the state essentially committed themselves to taking action necessary to see to it that the students' rights were respected. And one result of this settlement was the California Department of Education's issuance, after releasing several confusing guidances and opinions on the issue in the prior 2 years, of a legal advisory clarifying that trained volunteer school personnel were legally authorized to administer insulin injections when nurses were not available. A Nurses Professional Association challenged this legal advisory in court with a lawsuit of its own, arguing that the advisory was in violation of state law, and that even if not in violation of state law, that it had been improperly adopted through the use of a flawed administrative procedure. Page 48. The association's most substantial argument was that the advisory violated the California Nurse Practice Act, NPA. In the view of the association, the NPA defined the administering of injections, including insulin injections, as the practice of nursing, and therefore required that only qualified and properly licensed nurses could legally administer such injections. Put another way, If only nurses were allowed to give such injections, then school personnel, by giving them, were acting as nurses in violation of the law. The lower courts, first the superior court in which the case was tried, and then the court of appeal to which the decision was first brought for review, ruled in favor of the nurses, although each gave different reasons. The case was then appealed to our state's highest court. Normally, the state Supreme Court, in reviewing lower court decisions, is charged with deciding whether the lower court has made a mistake, whether it has committed what is termed reversible error. This is often a narrower question than who is right or wrong, or what should the decision have been, because there may be situations in which an appeals court must say, well, we wouldn't have reached that decision ourselves, but because we can't say that what the lower court decided is clearly wrong, we're not justified in overturning its judgment. Page 49. However, in this case, because of the particular procedure through which the case came to the Supreme Court, the judges reviewed the case de novo, meaning the Supreme Court was free to take a completely fresh new look at the case and decide, as if it were the first court hearing so case, what the outcome should be. And the unanimously reached outcome was that school personnel other than nurses were legally permitted to administer insulin injections to students with diabetes. Although oral medications have become more common, we probably all still know people, often including children, who self-inject insulin on a daily basis or who are assisted in doing so by family or friends. If using injectable insulin required the presence or participation of a licensed nurse, the entire nature of diabetes management in this country would have to change. Versions of the drug would have to be developed that require injections far less often than daily. But given current diabetes management protocols, there wouldn't be anywhere near enough nurses to meet the need, and the cost of insulin treatment would likely become prohibitive. That is the problem in schools, and if insulin administration were restricted to nurses, students would face serious obstacles in going to school. These are the sorts of points that someone arguing for the rights of the students or for the expanded role of school employees would typically advance. Other public policy or medical arguments might likewise be advanced on behalf of broadened access, and a number of policy arguments could fairly be marshaled on the side of the nurses as well. But the court's decision addresses none of these issues directly. Rather, it deals with legal issues, issues that are frankly quite esoteric for non-lawyers, issues that are what we would call a technical nature, but it is often on the basis of just such considerations that pivotal public concerns hinge. So what did the Supreme Court decide? To be continued in Part 2.